We're going to be reading from Genesis 40. It came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confirmed. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them. And he served them, so they were in custody for a while. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, had a dream. Both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers, who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, saying, "Why do you look so sad today?" And they said to him, "We each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." No interpreter of it. So Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please." And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "Behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. It was as though it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place. And you will be put at Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were a butler. But remember me when it is well with you. And please show kindness to me, make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and there were three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head." So Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you." Now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. Then he restored the chief butler to the butlership again, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. So I'm sure it's a well-known passage, isn't it? I'm just going to, I was visiting my uncle, I think, a few weeks ago. I know you can't see it, I can always show you after. But my grandfather, who I never knew, it's this picture here. I know it's difficult to see from here. He was in amateur dramatics. It's probably where I got it from in my younger days. And I actually was in the actual production of Joseph at school. It was horrendous. But he was in amateur dramatics, but the point of the matter is, it's because it's Remembrance, I think Sunday today, which reminds me, we were driving along, and I was trying to be on time. We left at 8 o'clock, and there was loads of traffic. The journey took longer than intended, and we ended up at Thorpe Le Soken, where there was some kind of procession, and I drove right past cars, not knowing what was actually happening. Drove up to the lady, which didn't look very amused. And she said, "What do you think you're doing?" And we said, "I need to get to the church. I'm speaking there." She said, This is a Remembrance Sunday. We are remembering the people who fought here." And they said, "Well, is there any other way we can get there? Because I need to get there. Can I just drive through the traffic?" I was getting quite stressed. She turned and she said, "Have some respect." So I thought, oh, dear. But in the end, we turned around and going the right way and ended up getting here in the end. But the point, my grandfather, he fought in the Second World War. My uncle showed me many, many letters of his, which he said hopefully would one day give them to me. And my grandmother was called Joan, he would say, "Dearest, my dearest Joan, bombs are going off here, there, and everywhere, and I think of you and better days." And it sounded almost like he was in a prison. That he was a spy for Britain, and he was going because he could speak German, because before, and he was a Jewish man, so it didn't go down well if he would have been captured. But he could speak fluent German, because before the war he studied at Berlin, I think at one of the universities there, and could speak fluent German. So he fought in the war, and I just was reading lots of these letters, and it was just phenomenal how he was capturing the time, how you could just take that letter and capture the actual what was happening there. He used to speak very not in good light, obviously, of the German people, and he was actually very, very traumatized when he came back for the war, because he was one of the liberators of Belsen concentration camp. And I'm sure I've said this before, and he took one of the ladies out of the camp who was dying of typhus, and she lost her. This was when all the British went in to liberate. And the Jewish people were actually told, you know, don't actually go into this camp because it's going to be too horrendous. But nonetheless, he did. He said he wasn't Jewish. And my mother said, used to say, "I don't know how he got away with it because he looked very Jewish." But he went in there, and there's this lady amongst the corpses. And he took her out, and she got her to hospital because they were actually burying lots of corpses. And she was amongst the dead. And yet she started, I think, waving her arm. And she was alive, and she got well. And one day he was in Paris with my older brother when he was a child, and she said, "My captain," it was this lady that he got out of, not Auschwitz, Belsen, and she lost her two sons and her husband, but she remarried. But so my grandfather is an example of many who fought in the wars, and there's been many dreadful battles since then where people have fought and died in war. And we can think, I'm sure he probably thought, when is this going to end? When is this prison going to end? It was almost like being in prison, surrounded by death, surrounded by unhappiness, surrounded by no hope. He didn't have a relationship with the Lord, and I'm sure that made things even more difficult than they already were. And so when we read this passage in Joseph, we can see how Joseph was put in prison for doing nothing wrong. He hadn't done anything wrong, except, of course, one could say he was Jacob's favourite son. And it says in, as I'm sure you've been reading this, but in Genesis 37, it says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colours. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, 'Please hear the dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood up all around and bowed down to my sheaf.'" And we can imagine what the brothers must have felt, that here is our little brother here, he's a favourite of our father. We can't stand him. And he comes to us and says, "We're going to bow down to him." Who does he think he is? They weren't quite understanding the actual purpose and message of the dream. Perhaps Joseph was very, very young, and he didn't quite know the consequences of telling a dream that his brothers were going to one day bow down to him, which we know that's eventually happened, don't we? We know that they're taken from Canaan through the famine, and they meet Joseph, and eventually they realise who he is, and they literally bow down. And so the dream actually comes to pass. We know that perhaps the father, Jacob, loved Joseph more because of Rachel. Rachel was his first love. Jacob, as we know, he stole Esau's birthright for a mere morsel of food, didn't he? And Rebekah, she was quite a cunning mother. She knew what to do. She had two sons, Esau and Jacob, and she thought, well, Jacob needs to get the birthright. He needs to do it. So she manipulates the situation, and Jacob acts as Esau, kills an animal's killed, and he puts it on. So Jacob thinks that it's Esau, because Esau means hairy. He was a hairy man, and he gives him the blessing. It was very important in those days for the father to pronounce blessings on the children. It actually meant that the blessings would go down to the next generations to come. I mean, even today, when things go wrong in a family and the father really ends up crushing the child, we grow up with, and speaking from experience, we grow up with lots of issues, which when we come to the cross, Jesus really needs to deal with. Well, we want him to deal with them, because he wants to set us free. And so Esau finds out that Jacob has stolen his birthright, and he's going to kill him. So his mother realizes what's going to happen. You must stay with the relative Laban. So Jacob goes on a long journey, stays with Laban, and he has to work for Laban and work for Laban and work for Laban. And Laban worships false gods, and he doesn't treat Jacob very well. He's he's a good businessman, quite shrewd. And he thinks, oh, this man gets blessed. I must make money out of him. So I'm going to get him to work very, very hard. And he works for many years, and he promises Rachel. But instead, we know that he gives Leah, and Leah covers herself with the veil on the wedding night. And that's where the veil comes from in weddings. It actually comes from Jewish tradition, from when Leah covers herself with that veil. So she's not to be shown that she is Rachel. She's not Rachel to Jacob. And so when he wakes up after the wedding night, he realizes that it wasn't Rachel, and he gets very angry with Laban. But Laban says, calm down, calm down. I'll give you Jacob. Just work another number of years, and I'll give you Rachel. So we know the story of the speckled animals, speckled sheep, and he puts one together, and he gets blessed even more. And eventually he is given Rachel, but Leah he doesn't really love, and she's having all these children, and he still doesn't really love her. He loves Rachel, and Rachel can't conceive, and she really wants to give him a baby, so she then gets into lies with a servant. But then eventually she does conceive, and she has Joseph. And then eventually Jacob leaves Laban, because Laban doesn't want to let him go. Of course, he's onto a good thing, so he doesn't want to let him go. He leaves, and Rachel, she takes the false gods. Laban comes after him, and he says, you've taken the false gods. And Jacob says, I haven't. And anyone who's taken the false gods will die, will be punished. And sure enough, Rachel, she gives birth to Benjamin, and she dies in childbirth. And so we have the children of the Jacob, who eventually wrestles with God in the place where it's going to become Israel, and he's called Israel. And the 12 tribes of Judah are here in these chapters, and Jacob favors Joseph, because Joseph obviously reminds him of Rachel, but he loves him more than anything in the world. And the brothers can't stand this. They can't bear the fact that Joseph is loved by their father. So they think, we need to get rid of this troublemaker. We're going to do him in, and we're going to get rid of him. And so what they do, they try to kill him, throw him down the well, but then some Ishmaelites come and they sell him as a slave to Egypt. Now, when they sold him as a slave to Egypt, Egypt was a people which was not part of the covenant. So it was a land where God would not have wanted the Israelite people, to the Hebrews, to go. And Joseph here is carted off here, where false gods are worshipped, where child sacrifices are taken place, where horrendous things happen. And he works for Potiphar. And we know that he does everything right. Everything he does, he's a righteous man. He doesn't do anything wrong. He does everything according to his faith in the God Almighty. And Potiphar's wife, when she tries to sleep with him, he resists. And she tries it again, and he resists. And eventually he runs off and she takes his garment and she accuses him. And here he is now in a prison within Egypt. He's not only been sold into slavery, he believes in God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of his father. He believes that God's promise will come forth, but he's now stuck in this prison. We read how Joseph is a righteous man who was betrayed, put into a jail for resisting temptation from Potiphar's wife. He was sold into slavery because he said that a dream, he prophesied what was going to happen, which wasn't the wisest thing to do, perhaps. Perhaps some say that he was showing off to his brothers. I mean, you can imagine his brothers were not very happy themselves. And here this mad young boy comes and says, look at me. And he's wearing this very expensive garment. And he says, one day you're going to bow down to me. So it didn't go down very well. But nonetheless, he had a real faith in God. Here was a man who sold in slavery, abandoned by his brothers, put in bondage, sent into a foreign land and abandoned, rejected, and then falsely accused and left to rot in an Egyptian jail. The jails in those days wouldn't have had internet and Wi-Fi connections and mobile phones and Apple iPads and very high-tech music stations, but they would have been with people rotting literally in the flesh. The actual word Joseph means he will add, Now, the biblical mention of Joseph, who served time in a prison, can be noteworthy within itself. For us living in the century we're living now, a prison is a punishment for crime, and it seems quite natural. But in the ancient world, this was not a case. It would have been the death penalty, a fine, or even bodily mutilation were the usual means of making people suffer for their crimes in ancient Near East. Prisons were rare also in the ancient world. Very rarely, we don't really read in the five books of Moses that if you do something wrong, you will get being put in prison. It's as if you do something wrong, you will be stoned. So there's not prisons like we could imagine in the biblical time. The importance then of prison was a sentence. And in this case, Joseph is that the author of the book of Genesis is recording correct information, for Egypt was one of a few nations in the ancient Near East that had prisons in what we know as the classical sense of the term. The main prison of Egypt was actually called the place of confinement. A place of confinement. It was divided into two parts. So you had a cell block, like a modern prison, and a barracks for holding a large number of prisoners who were forced to very hard labours. They were forced to work and work and work. And we know little about these procedures, but it does not seem that criminals were given a number of years to serve in prison. Perhaps all sentences were life sentences if someone was put into a jail in Egypt, or confinement, but they would have to work. In other words, they were waiting to find out what was going to become of them. They were waiting to find out if they were going to be executed. This last category seems to be that Joseph is here in this prison. He's away from the whole world. No one can remember him. His father thinks he is dead. We can imagine the turmoil that his father must have been in. And here are two individuals who have dreams. We can imagine what Joseph must have felt when these two men had dreams. He thought, one dream's been bad enough, it's got me into this mess. Now I have to interpret two other dreams. What could happen now? And we have the story of the butler and the breaker. The butler was restored to the office and leads us to believe that perhaps he was accused of being involved in some plot against the king. And the baker was executed. Perhaps he was accused of putting something in the food. We don't know. But the Pharaoh must have been quite worried about it to have him killed. And these dreams are interpreted in chapter 14. So we have the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt who were confined in the prison had a dream. Both of them, each man's dream in one night and each man's dream with his own interpretation. And Joseph came into him in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, saying, "Why do you look so sad today?" And they said to him, "We each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." So Joseph said to him, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" Now, the reason why he was saying "do not interpretations belong to God," because for people in Egypt, it would have not been unusual to be able to interpret these dreams. To interpret these dreams, Egyptology, you would interpret various signs and wonders. And we know in the books of Exodus, we see Pharaoh asking his two magicians to interpret these signs and wonders. So it wouldn't have been such a huge thing for someone to interpret these dreams. But this is why Joseph is saying to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" Now, even that would have been difficult for them to understand, because their interpretation as God would be lots of goddesses and gods. But nonetheless, Joseph is making a statement here. He's saying that the dreams that I am having, these are coming from the God himself. They are not my interpretations. They are from God. And so the chief butler told this dream to Joseph and said to him, "Behold, in my dream, a vine was before me." Sometimes we can see that Jesus, we know that Jesus said he was the vine, but I don't think it's referring to that there. And in the vine, there were three branches. It was a thought. It budded its blossoms, short forth. So it's bringing forth life. And its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. So it's bringing forth fruit. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days." 3 days, three is a very important number in the Bible. "But now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place, and you will be put in Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler." So it would have been humiliation for this butler to be restored to such a state in prison where he would have been put with other people that he would have not even conceived to be been put with. And yet he is in this prison, and now Joseph is saying he is going to be restored his rightful place and with amongst the people who are working with Pharaoh. And this would have been a huge awakening for this butler. And so then we have the baker. The baker got very zealous because he suddenly heard this wonderful dream, this interpretation. And he comes to Joseph and he says, I saw the interpretation was good. He said to Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and there were three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of basket, good for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. So Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree." Not very pleasant. And the birds will eat your flesh from you. And so it does. So it comes to pass. These dreams, almost prophecy, are fulfilled. Incidentally, when we look at slave in the Hebrew, which is aved, slave means to be in bondage. And this is what Joseph was. He was not in bondage to sin, but he was enslaved. He was enslaved. Also means enslaved. He was enslaved in a prison for doing nothing wrong. And yet he never cursed God. He never slated God. He never blamed God. He always trusted that God would bring him through. Now, incidentally, in the Hebrew text, the pun in "lift off your head" is more evident in Hebrew text in verse, I think, 13. "Now within 3 days, Pharaoh, lift up your head and restore your place." Some texts don't say that, but it actually reads, "lift up your head." And so this is what the interpretation reads. Remember, they would have not understood that it was coming from God, and that's why Joseph had to say, all this comes from God. And so the dreams are interpreted, and the dreams come to pass. And Joseph says to the butler who is released, he says, remember me. And it says, yeah, but he hanged the chief baker, and Joseph had interpreted them, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. You see, here Joseph was still left in this cell, forgotten. How did he survive? I think he was about 30 years old when he appeared before Pharaoh, because as we know in the next chapters, Pharaoh has this dream of 7 well cows, and I think it's 7 ill cows, and it's 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine, and suddenly God uses this for the butler to say, I know a man who can interpret this dream. And Pharaoh says, who? And he talks about Joseph, and Joseph is released from the dungeon, from the prison. He appears before Pharaoh, well-dressed and shaven, I think it says, and he interprets the dream, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh says to him, well, what shall we do? You need to appoint someone. And then Joseph gets appointed, second in command, given the signet ring of Pharaoh. And sure enough, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. And the famine spreads across to Canaan, which is now the land of Israel. And the brothers perhaps are feeling a bit sheepish about what they've done to their poor old brother. And Jacob says, well, you must go to Egypt. So here we have Joseph being sold to Egypt, but now the brothers are going to literally be sent to Egypt by the father. And we know the rest of the story, that they don't recognize Joseph, and there's a whole palaver with Joseph wanting the son Benjamin, the youngest son, and they have to go and say to their father, look, we need to bring our younger brother Benjamin. This must have been so painful for Jacob. It must have been so horrendous that not only he lost his beloved son Joseph, but now he's going to lose Benjamin. And yet they do bring Benjamin. And I think we know the story of the cup which is hidden in the sacks, and Joseph reveals who he is to his brothers, and his brothers then bow down and they realize that this was the brother who they had betrayed, and they could have been killed on the spot. They must have been frightened. But Joseph says to them, he says, and I remember when, as a child, this really spoke to me, because when I went to this Frinton primary school, this was actually saying by the vicar, that Joseph forgave. He didn't say, now is my time to take revenge on my brothers. And he could have done. But he said to them, he said, you know, God has used this for his own purpose, for his glory. If Joseph hadn't been sold into slavery, the people of Canaan would have died in the famine. The people of Egypt would have died in the famine. But God used something which was for harm, for his own glory and for his own purpose. But here Joseph is in the dream. He says, remember me. We're left in this chapter, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. So we can imagine how Joseph must have felt forgotten. I was talking about my grandfather in the war, how he must have felt forgotten, fighting in these horrendous battles, and many ever since, as we remember Remembrance Sunday. Proverbs 3, verses 5 to 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him, and he will make your path straight. God used an impossible situation for his own glory to be fulfilled. There are countless of examples when God uses impossible situations to show who he is. Job 19:25, he loses everything. And he says, and his wife says, curse God and die. And yet he says, I know that my Redeemer lives, and that in the end he will stand on the earth. Sometimes, Kiara and I have been ministered to people who have been in their own prisons, their own spiritual prisons, and it doesn't matter how much God extends their hand, it's difficult for them to come out of the turmoils that they're in. God brought freedom in his Son, Jesus Christ, so we don't have to walk in that darkness of the world. It says, the Bible says, he's disarmed powers and authorities. He made a public spectacle out of them, triumphing them over the cross. In one way, he did disarm the powers and authorities in Joseph's life. And 2 Corinthians 5:7 says, for we live by faith, not by sight. And here Joseph was needing to live by faith, not by sight. He saw the situation that he was in. He saw the difficult, the horrendous situation that he was in, this prison. And he had been forgotten. He had not been remembered. And if we left the chapter there, we would wonder, gosh, where is God in all this? Where is God? Where is God when Joseph didn't do anything wrong? He was put in a cell to die. And yet we know that God will use an impossible situation for his glory. John 15:21 says, they will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. God is a God of mercy and compassion. He set Joseph free. He's there to set people free. Even that lady that my grandfather took out in Belsen concentration camp, the suffering did come to an end. And God never caused that suffering. There is an enemy, and he wants to destroy our beliefs. He wants to kill, steal, and destroy. But the Bible says that the God of peace has crushed him under our feet, and the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ is with us. Joseph didn't stay in prison, but God raised him up. He was willing to surrender and be made an instrument of God's will. We can ask ourselves today, are the situations that we are facing which are challenging, or past situations that are challenging? But we know that God is in the midst of all these difficult situations. He wants to set us free. He wants to give us that peace, that shalom, which is a peace. And only he can do that. Jesus Christ came to set the captive free. And I just want to, I'll finish there. Thank you.